Welcome to The Cannabis Professor, a marijuana science and culture podcast, broadcasting from Pennsylvania to the rest of the nation and the world. My name's Scott, I'm your cannabis professor, and today I'm joined by a veteran of the marijuana wars, a man named Keegan, and we are going to figure out if it's better to land a job in medical marijuana in a dispensary, or if it's better in a recreational market, sort of like a medical versus recreational employer discussion. So before we get into it, firstly, thanks for joining me today, Keegan. I appreciate you making the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Scott. I'm really excited.
Oh, yeah. Now I feel like I found the perfect gentleman for this because I know you've really spent time in a lot of different corners of cannabis. So just to get everybody up and aware on your experience, how long would you say at this point have you worked in cannabis?
Let's see. I got my first official cannabis job in 2016? No. Yeah, 16. So six years, coming up on 6 years.
Yeah, coming up.
In Washington, Nevada, and then here in Pennsylvania for the last 3 years.
Okay. So if it was last 3 years, what was your first 3 years, I guess?
First 3 years were like on and off in Washington in the summers, and then in dispensaries in Las Vegas. I worked off the strip at a dispensary for like about 2 years.
Damn, off the strip. That is kind of where a lot of people think, you know, I guess what Planet 13's out there.
Yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
That's always the big mention. Between, I guess that's what, almost five states, I guess, technically in those 6 years. How many companies have you worked for in that time, would you say?
Well, I guess, would you say, does another company buying a current company count as working for two companies? Or
I would say it does, even though it shouldn't, but it definitely does, yeah.
If that counts for working for two companies, then five.
Okay, so five and five in that. And once again, thinking about this, the length of that experience, how many different positions would you say you've held? And if you're willing to go through them,
yeah,
by all means.
Not too many. So I've trimmed. So I've been a trimmer. I've been a bud tender. I have been a shift lead. And then there's like up the ladder, ASM. And I'm currently a general manager and been a general manager for about the last 3 years.
How many stores have you GM'd? I think it's more than one, right?
Yeah, two. Two stores as GM.
Nice. So at least for anybody out there who's trying to think, you know, do we have the right folks for it? You can see a lot of experience. And honestly, I think, what's the earliest somebody could have worked in weed? Maybe like 2012 or
2012,
14,
if you were in Washington, yeah. Maybe, well, California, but that's the Wild West.
Like, yeah.
You could have been having a job in California. But I think, yeah, 2012 was when Colorado and Washington passed their bill.
Right on. So, well, just before we jump all the way into it, exactly how much weed do you think you sold to people? How much green have you gotten into the hands of these fine American citizens?
I had the unique opportunity of working the first day of recreational in Las Vegas and working that whole first week and first month. Actually, the first month, the state of Nevada actually declared a state of emergency because we ran out of weed for people to buy. You know, and I've also worked insane days here in Pennsylvania. I always like to tell people during the great toilet paper crisis of 2020, the store that I was managing at the time was doing insane numbers. You know, you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of people a day during that same time when people thought that dispensaries were also going to close. Oh, man. Thousands of pounds. It has to be. It has to be. But attending almost every day for years on end, it's got to be in the thousands of pounds.
Yeah, it's incredible. I always think, like, I know there's people out there, I'm sure, who could put their thumb on, like, I've grown and some insane number, tonnage of weed kind of thing. But to me, it's like, well, it's a little different when you have to cook all the food and serve it to people. Like, you know, as a server, like, chefs would be like, I've cooked, like, 20,000 pounds of chicken. I was like, yeah, but I had to walk that shit from you to the kitchen. I feel like that's always going to take a little bit more than the bulk side of it. But since you trimmed also, obviously.
Right. And that was just very sparingly, and that was like just on a, like a buddy's farm, just like make a quick buck during the summer.
So a lot of folks out there, when you're thinking, okay, maybe I want to work in med, maybe work in rec, you might not really have much of a choice because generally the state provides the legality for each market.
Right.
And I'd say most places do med then rec, it seems, from that way. They kind of dip their toes in. But some people do move for these opportunities. There was the big green rush out in the California way around that 20 teens kind of time period. So Keegan, have you, since you have been in multiple states, did you travel because of weed, or did it just happen that you could be employed in a weed job in those states?
Yeah, it just so happened. So the trimming was more on the side. That was more just like a one-off thing. But so my past life was a hockey player, mm-hmm. and played some overseas hockey. And then after that ended, I was really like, what am I going to do? I actually stumbled into the cannabis job in Las Vegas. Oh, actually, funny story. On the application, it says CW. And okay. I was thinking, okay, I have a marketing degree. Like, I have an advertising degree. Like, I thought I was applying to, like, the TV channel.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, did they have an affiliation with the CW, right?
The CW.
Like, which I'm not even sure I know what the CW stands
for. No idea.
It's just CW, right?
Yeah, the CW.
Two awkward letters. Yeah.
But so they were, like, scheduled an interview, and I went there, and I Googled up the address, and it was actually for Charlotte's Web. So I had prepared
the company. Yeah. Oh shit.
And so I had prepared myself for this whole TV station interview and like got all my material, like got my advertising portfolio together.
Yeah, shit.
And then walked in there and they're like, hey, like, so we're opening up this dispensary. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, I just so happened like, and it was so easy at that point because they didn't know anything. I was like, yeah, I know the difference between THC and CBD. I know a couple basic terpenes. Like, and they're like, oh my God. You're so far ahead of the game. Like, when can you start? And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh,
well,
shit.
I thought I was getting a TV station job, but this is even better. So, and then when I moved to Philly, it wasn't job related, but then I just fell into, I worked at a cannabis advertising agency. And then
I think that's when we met, when you were just getting out of that agency and coming into
and then
the
got into the back into the retail side, which I personally prefer being closer to it just because when you're on that advertising side, it's not really the industry, it's more the advertising industry, but advertising for something you're interested in. It's like if you're interested in cars, you don't it doesn't really matter how much you know about cars. It's you just so happen to get to work with something you like.
Yeah, it just happens to be the thing in the commercial kind of, or
yeah,
the thing in the
exactly.
ad, but it, generally the thoughts are the same. Like, how do we parry this into
right.
the eyes?
When you're thinking of advertising, it's just object X. How do we, you don't personalize it. And in the beginning, it's just what are the strategies to get object X in front of the most people.
Yeah.
So I really just wanted to be closer to the actual cannabis. So getting back into this side of the industry is really beneficial for me personally.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, do you think having traveled already for cannabis, kind of understanding some of the dynamics of, you know, what you think and expect and then what it ends up being, especially with interviews like the CW, it kind of actually only on a tangent reminds me, And we're in PA right now. We're kind of outside of Philadelphia as a matter of where we are recording. And one well-known thing that happens here, I'm not sure how multi-state it is because I don't know. Since you're watching, I guess you can tell me. Vector Incorporated is a well-known, like, high school swindling thing where they always say we want kids in school. Pre-COVID, it was 18 and a quarter an appointment. And when you're a teenager, you're like, $18 an hour? Oh, my God, I need that. And what it really was is the company Cutco Knives. Coming to like a Vector meeting, you'd like sit in a room.
Yeah.
They tell you all these really vague things about like sales tactics and how to close. And you're like, what the fuck am I selling vectors? Like, I don't understand. They're like, no, you're selling fucking knives, bro. Like, now you're going to make every person who ever knew you hate you. Because you're like, can you just buy like $1,400 worth of knives? Because now three of the people in my family jumped into this. I thankfully was the fourth child and avoided it like the plague. But I had a neighbor who got sucked in. Undeniably, some of the best knives that exist, but some of the most subterfuge-laden approaches. Like, you'll never know it's knives until...
Yeah, until the very end.
But that reminds me a little bit, at least of that, the CW. Do you think you might travel in the future for cannabis, knowing now what
1,000,000%. This is definitely the industry I want to stay in. Mm-hmm. I have committed myself. This is the job that I will build my retirement on.
Oh, shit.
Or this career. Like, I will stay in this industry. Probably won't run stores my entire career.
It's the hope. None of us necessarily want to get stuck in the retail side forever.
Yes, definitely this industry. So I do plan on moving, jumping around maybe. Lots of opportunities, I think, are still coming up. So yeah, 100% I would move.
Well, with that all behind us, now we can really take a look at some of the major differences in med and rec, since you really had both. Now, I can admit, honestly, I've only worked in PA, in med. My job now has kind of expanded where I'm going to have more rec, I guess, workability. I'll be in rec dispensaries. I'll be able to kind of do those things, open up stores. But I can say at this present time, I do not have that experience in my pocket. But I know Keegan does. So what would you say are some of the biggest differences between med, which usually comes first, and a rec dispensary coming second?
I break it down into the simpleness of it is culture versus education.
Okay, which one's culture?
Rec is culture. Medical is education. The number one thing when you go into a medical dispensary is we need to be the most educated. We're not doctors, but we have a responsibility to give people as close to as we can the correct answer. People understand we're not doctors, but we are supposed to be the experts, and it's a responsibility you have to take seriously.
It's like we're not white coats, but you have to be like an off-white, right. Slightly light
people
green coat.
People will come to you for answers, and they expect you to have them. And for some people, they deserve answer questions with very serious consequences.
Yeah, I can imagine that too.
So it's something that you have to acknowledge and take serious that it might not be life-threatening, but it is something that's so important in their life that you have to take it just as serious as they're taking it. And I feel like that's across the board in medical. Is every dispensary you go into in a medical setting is, hey, we're going to be the best educated. Look at our training program, this and that. You see a lot of dispensaries and companies partner up with like universities, things like that. They're trying to set that tone of medical to earn the subconscious trust of people.
It's like a weird, like, it's a different clout than social media, but yeah. It's still kind of clout overall.
It's like really. That prestige.
Yeah.
That if we're recognized by a university, it gives us credit that we are a legit form of medicine. If we're partnered up with a Drexel, with a Temple, with a Penn. And I think all three of those schools actually are affiliated with
right.
with a dispensary. I don't know that for a fact, but
did you see that happen also in the other states that you're in where like this just seems to be the play?
Not as much, to be honest. Okay. So Pennsylvania is also in the unique area or spot that no other state's medical program is like PA's.
Yeah, we get three stores a license. Like people are hungry for that shit too.
It's like this is already a rec state for all intents and purposes. Like the number of the volume of dispensaries and the volume of business being done is on a rec level. Like this doesn't have that medical flow. It's far more popular in PA than any other state. Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'd be willing to bet that they're doubling other states before they went rec.
Yeah. I mean, the hunger we've seen, as we said, we've both been through mergers before in this kind of industry. Yeah. Everybody's piling into what seems to be, you know, the smoothest road system, and PA, as a native PA resident, you know, I haven't really moved for jobs or anything. It's surprising because I was like, well, I know it's PA. So like, yeah, we like weed, but I'm assuming these other bigger states, of course, like are going to love it, especially if they have the land space, you know, to be able to grow it, or less close to the Northeast where there's obviously a lot of authority, a lot of old ideas that still kind of resolve. But PA is almost at 1 million registrants in their med program. And I don't think most people even get over like 250,000 before yeah. rec comes. It's like rampant. And I think, the bylaws are really a big reason for that.
It's crazy. And, you know, I'm just connecting dots now. It kind of makes sense. Before I moved here in 2018, part of the reason I had moved here was because I know I wanted to stay in cannabis. And at the time, PA was the number one state in the country for cannabis research.
Oh, so the research kind of clouded up enough, like gave people the thought yeah. and then they could come in without the stigma being like, oh, you just want to sell a bunch of weed. It's like, no, we're trying to cure.
Yeah.
We're trying to help people out.
But yeah, so I think PA definitely has that more rec feel, but yeah, in recreational dispensaries, it's cool. It's fun. It loses a little bit of its passion for me personally, because I really like telling people how much I know about weed.
I can't imagine anybody else who's like that. They're like, some asshole would make a whole podcast about how much he knows about weed. Yeah, that's got to be crazy. You're alone in that field.
You know, there's a lot more people of just walking up in a recreational dispensary. Now, I was only a bud tender in Las Vegas, not in Washington. So there is a little bit of the tourist factor in Las Vegas that might have a different experience than other bud tenders in other parts of the country. But lots of tourists, you know, what's gas? What's the fire today, bro? Like, what's heat? Like, let me smell that. Like, what's good? And it's cool. You can be fun. You can say, and I remember my manager saying, like, you can have very casual conversation. So you'd be like, man, I just had this 15 minutes ago in my car and I'm fucked up right now. and that's how I would sell weed. I'd be like, bro, I'm fucking blitzed right now. And they would buy it. And it became more about numbers because, you know, in rec, there's a lot of competition and overhead. You get just more and more. And so it does become a little bit more in a retail setting, which isn't my favorite thing about rec. Like, that's probably why I prefer the medical market is A, that education, but also, yes, numbers are good. No one's going to, you know, point their nose at numbers and making money, but it's because it's medical, it's a nice little shield from like all the retail bullshit. Now, as we get closer to rec, you're already starting to see it come in and infiltrate its way into the lifestyle and in daily business operations. But there's still the guise of medical. And while we still have that invisible shield that gives us this weird legal protection, it's nice because you can focus on the reasons why everyone's in this industry. You can focus on the positives, you know, the research that is obviously so important in this state that they're doing so much of it, and, you know, really actually helping people and actually growing the market and killing a stigma and creating a new cannabis culture for this new generation until it just becomes all about numbers. And then once it becomes all about numbers, then it's, well, I don't have time to spend 20 minutes telling you the lineage of the strain and why it's going to work for you. I want you to buy two of them and get out of my face so I can talk to the next person.
Yeah. And it is definitely burn and turn. Do you, were there tactics, you know, since it's closer to, or eventually gets closer to common retail in a rec, in med, there's doesn't seem like competition drives down any prices. It seems like people who sell gasoline, they all kind of agree $4 sounds good and everybody's just going to make money. And maybe you'll cut them 5 cents, but it's not going to really ruin the batch. Do you find, or have you seen in rec markets, is there any sense of competition affecting the price point, or is competition more the idea of just the volume per site?
Well, so the name of the game, if you want to beat price, is being vertically integrated. Really, those are the only companies that are challenging anybody at the price point, and it's usually at their dispensary exclusively.
If you could, for anybody out there who doesn't know, what would vertical integration mean?
So a vertically integrated company would be a company that owns a dispensary and a grow so that they can grow their own flower and sell it in their own building. So those companies can sell, you know, the $35 eights, the $40 eights, maybe the $25 eights, even if you're in a state like Oregon or Washington, you know, Oregon will have $10 eight. Like, it's nuts.
$120 ounces and shit like that.
Ounces under 100 for sure. It's crazy. But
it's not the best weed, though, for that.
But, you know, even the last time I was back home in Washington, you know, they still have your $55, $60 eights. Like, it's not how it's still not the most ideal thing. People still got to make money and it's still expensive to produce. There's just more variety. There's just more things like that. Like, people think, oh, when I go to Colorado, like, I'm going to be able to take $100 and I'll live like a king. It's like, no, you might get some good deals. Like, there'll probably be sales and it will be definitely cheaper, but it's not the $25, you know, eights that you were getting from your buddy in high school. It's, it's still, you know, it's still fueling a business.
Sorry, folks. I don't know if you can hear that coming through. I'm not exactly sure what it is. It seems to be outside of the wall because it ain't in here, but it's very, very strange. There
it goes.
Oh,
my gosh. Is that me?
No worries. No worries.
Holy smokes.
I was like, what is that vibration? No worries. No worries at all. As you said, like, you know, the prices are a little lower in rec, but in med, they're a little higher up. With vertical integration, now Florida runs that way. That's the only way that Florida runs. If you want to work in cannabis, you have to have a grow and dispensaries all as one. So I haven't seen or heard much about the prices in Florida, but nobody's like, go to Florida. It's super cheap because everybody's vertical. So it feels like there's still that bit of a poker of like everybody agrees we want to make X amount of money more than it. Mm-hmm. But as I know in med, they usually say testing is a part of that equation. In rec, what's testing look like? Is it similar to med where everything has to be terpenes, cannabinoids, and the full flush? Or
So that more depends on the state. So recently I went to Maine, and on their packaging, there is nothing. There is not a THC percentage. There is not a terpene. On the things, on the concentrates that I got, it just said, this product contains THC. Was the only label.
Oh, shit.
But now in Nevada, it was very similar to PA, where you had your pretty basic label, you know, all your leading terps, you know, expiration date, all your, like, everything you would expect on a label. And Washington, I think, is the same way, where I don't think they list terps, but they'll list the THC. I think Colorado is the same way, where they won't list the terps.
Just THC. Like, just potency, ideally, like alcohol is. Yeah, I think I saw one of the med pros that we worked with, She's a Jersey resident, and she brought one from Jersey, and it was just THC and CBD, no terpenes allowed. Mm-hmm. And theirs is only med, so that's even rougher because they were pretty much approaching their med as a rec, where they were like, we're not even going to tell you the medical stuff. And
right.
I assume budtending there might be a little closer to like what you said in the rec. Can you smell the weed in every rec market, or is that only in some of them?
I don't know.
And all the ones that you've
Washington, in the dispensaries I've been into in Washington, I could not, but I think there are some that you can.
But they're in like jars and stuff like that?
Yeah. In Nevada, yes. Every dispensary that I was in Las Vegas, all had smell jars.
Do you buy the weed in the smell jar?
No.
Thank God, right?
Yeah.
A lot of fingernails.
You just work it into your purchase order, one extra, you know, three extra eights, because, you know, it's weed sitting under a light, being open and exposed to air hundreds of times a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to dry out. It all smells like hay after the third day anyways. Mm. So if you don't catch it on like right when I put it out into the case, doesn't matter. Why smell it? It all smells like hay, man. It's been out here. We haven't changed them in 2 weeks.
I spoke to, and if people catalog back, a guy, Ryan, that we both know also, he'd worked in Colorado a while. And he said that where he was, in a very small dispensary, I remember him saying, like, you sort of breathe your smoke out into the mouth of another employee, that he would have to roll, like, they would all have to do the pre-rolls for the day. Was that something that you ever had to roll J's for work?
I have never had to do that. That's insane.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, I'm pretty sure if you go to Best Buy, you don't have to, like, program the fucking VCRs kind of thing.
I have to roll the pre-rolls.
So he was like, every morning, they would, like, come in, you know, X amount of time they had to arrive for work. And then, and that's the thing. Like, I have so many questions about, like, do you have to break up the weed, too? Because, like, what if you put a seed and cherry bombs some asshole who, like, comes back and is like, there's seeds all over this
what
joint.
What if you're a shit roller? Like, what? And is it, like, a machine? Is it a cigarette roller? Like, are you licking it? Does every single joint
I think you said they had, like, one of those banker sponges. Just whatever they use for envelopes, but it did. It was very much your hands. Like ideally, you know, I don't think after COVID you're gonna pull this off very easily. But it
how
seemed
inconsistent
like you were legitimately
oh
like
God.
Rolling some Titanics that are pregnant and like whatever you gotta do, just
just hand rolled artisanal J's.
Yeah, and then they would like you know $4. I think is what he said those J's were going for at that point.
God.
So like $4 J's.
We always gave that was our first patient thing in Las Vegas was you get a free pre roll of like our house brand.
Okay.
Or like a free like sucker, like free edible sucker, throw it in the bag.
Right on. So yeah, potentially, I guess if you work in rec market, you might run into that. But that I even felt like for just the sake of like don't feed me wings,
right.
You know, like by hand. Like I don't, I'll hold it myself. Generally, I don't think anybody's ever been like my ability to roll is stop me from smoking weed. There's never been more devices technically.
That's what I do miss though about the rec market and in Las Vegas is. Working in a dispensary was so different than working in a medical. It was so more laissez-faire. It, like, as much as, like, the sales side changes, like, the soul, I guess, of the job, the environment that you're working in is incredible. The culture is incredible. There's publications. There's way more talk about, like, strain lineage, and you can have more open contests, and you can have vendors come in, and the wealth of information is being spread around so much more positively, and the network of bud tenders is really awesome. I remember there was a thing in Las Vegas called Bud Tender Fight Club, where...
it's almost essentially a combination. Please go on, sir.
Where it was like a group meeting where any bud tender, like you had to show like your industry badge to get into the event, and it was just held somewhere. Now, technically, you couldn't smoke in the building, but, you know, you smoke in the building. but you would just come, and there was some, like, trivia, like cannabis trivia, but it was more just like an environment to like share information where like people would stand up and give like talks about terpenes and stuff like that. And, you know, vendors would be around and it was more just like a nice cultural meeting. And then that even sprung even like more underground culture stuff, which wasn't necessarily legal, but it's part of that still stuff that we remember and love about actual in the past cannabis culture of, you know, the criminalization and the demonization of cannabis and kind of, you know, now we can poke fun at it and make satire of, you know, reefer madness and those kind of things. Yeah. And we hear it's much more stringent, right? Like everything wants to be, and part of it, I think is maybe just being on the East Coast is they want it to run everybody wants their dispensary to run like another business.
Yes.
Where on the West Coast, we're like, why don't we just let it run like a dispensary?
Yeah, everybody out here is like, so Chick-fil-A really figured it out. Like, yeah. That's it. Like, just like, I guess, whenever I talk to marketers, advertisers, I always hear, they're like, they always fuck with us about Apple and Nike. Like, yeah. Those are just like, dude, do what Nike did. Dude, do what Apple did. They figured it out. And it's like, well, then I can't use that play again because everybody right. knows it. And they're just right. going to know you're jocking these people's styles. Yeah, all I kept hearing is like, well, COVID hit and Chick-fil-A is like, and we just need to be as efficient as them. I was like, they sell chicken, man. Right. And you don't need a freaking card to get into right. Chick-fil-A to get chicken.
Right. It doesn't cost you $200 to get into Chick-fil-A.
Now, I don't know what kind of weird shit they put through the work there because they all seem affected by something. Those yeah. clothes are corrective. Like, I've never seen corrective pants, corrective shoes, and a corrective shirt before. Chick-fil-A has found every supplier of those textiles. Were you allowed to smoke weed in the building? In the rec state?
No. So,
was there like a chill lounge somewhere else you could use it?
Yeah, for? So it was much more laissez-faire on be high as fuck at work. I mean, and that's even in the medical market, most people are like, hey, low-key, we all know what's going on. It's yeah. cool.
People actually said as patients, like, I hope you yeah. consume during work because, like, what the hell? Yeah, why wouldn't you enjoy
the point?
Perks?
Yeah. but, like, it was similar rules because you still are federally illegal, so, you know, don't smoke on the premises. Like, but it was like, hey, here's our property line. Stand right here. Like, stand 1 foot over on this line. After this crack in the sidewalk is where you can get high. So get high right here. And then, like, walk back around.
That's pretty fucking solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd say that's probably one thing that, although I haven't, like, you know, sat and simmered in a rec market, combustion, I think, in almost every med market is discouraged or considered non-compliant or illegal, whatever you want to call it. And in med or in rec, obviously they can't say that shit. So
no.
That's the one side of it for all the folks who like to hold lighters up at a concert and not their poorly charged cell phones.
Yeah.
I salute you because you're old enough to know what that means. And in the same way, although I'm probably more on dabs than anything nowadays, nothing beats grilling, period, end of sentence. It's
right.
just, it is really just the original fucking way
of course.
To go about things. Naturally. So what are some common misconceptions about working in cannabis med that you've run into?
Misconceptions about working in cannabis med, that it's not a retail job. People either think one of two things. They either think I'm coming to work at a pharmacy that sells weed and everyone's going to be wearing lab coats.
That's a good point.
And we're all going to be super smart, degreed people and are like very proper and prim and
no name tags will be embroidered in my coat yeah, naturally.
Exactly. Or the people that think medical is exactly like rec, and they're like, man, this is going to be the chillest job in the whole world. Both of those people hate the reality of what...
And they kind of hate each other, yeah. depending on what shift they're working.
Yeah, exactly. Where it is a little bit of both. Where, like I've said before, you do have the responsibility, but you do also don't want to discourage any culture. You have to keep that alive. And you have to create the new culture. But especially here in Pennsylvania with the volume that you do, you're seeing hundreds of people a day. You are a busy restaurant. You are a, you know, you are a Chick-fil-A in that level of volume where like there are days where like it does not stop for the 16 hours or 12 hours or whatever that you're open. You are full and you are moving and you have to be constantly turned on and making these emotional shifts between someone who has some really serious life issues and they need your advice really bad. And then the next person behind him is like some 22-year-old college kid that's like, bro, I'm going out tonight. What do I want? And you have to flip a switch of trying to emotionally connect with someone to now being way up here up top to meet college dude bros energy to because now you got to sell him something.
Right.
And that's actually a little bit more difficult than I think most people realize when they come into the industry is that it's an emotional building and you have to be willing to adapt and deflect a lot of things and just kind of focus on what you're doing.
Yeah, I think trust comes up huge, more person to person, even though that is, you know, person to company, you know, everybody's like, oh, Fords are good or Chevys are good, or there's some level of brand recognition and trust through that, where in cannabis, the trust is more with the individual they're dealing with. Although some people really do have like, oh, this brand sucks, or I don't like the way that they made their product. Usually they'll be angry at the bud tender for having encouraged them to do something rather than be like fucking a leer or something like that. Or
right.
Can't believe Cresco did this. They'll be like, this fucking guy told me I should smoke that. And it's like, I think although sales are metrics similar to other retail, the way you sell things
seems like it should be the same.
Mm.
But I, especially as an educator in it, feel like the people who do the best don't approach it as sales. Because, again, like, you have to just establish somebody who's like, wouldn't mind hanging out with you. Then they'll pretty much take every recommendation you have because you're chilling. And in that way, I think rec usually does do a better job, obviously, on the culture side. But, you know, it's kind of interesting in thinking about it because I feel like med gets you in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, if you're not able to like culture that person after the first couple of visits, like they're just going to be like, I don't want to talk to a fucking doctor about weed, man. Like, I only want to know that we are on the right side of the counter. Like, oh no, I'm not trying to do drugs. But now that we've established that, can I get fucking high as balls right now? And like, can you use the words I prefer? I've kind of seen that switch where like 2 to 3 months in, the people who actually patron it seem to change. Like they're like, all right, I'm good now. I heard all the good stuff. Can we just get down to brass tacks? And I'd say that's sort of like people who are really into beer. They use all that shit until they get a couple drinks in them. Then they stop talking about it because they realize the experience is meant to be enjoyed, not just described in that
way. Exactly.
Those areas. So do you think that if that's some of the things people think about med, which is a little skew, do people in med, because usually med comes first, so everybody's like, oh my God, we're in med. I can't wait till rec and I can smoke a J, or I guess roll them all day long for your job. Is there any skewed opinions of cannabis rec or cannabis rec from a med state? Is rec going to save us all? Is the weed so cheap? Does it flow like water all the time?
It's more abundance. I think it's more variety. And you're already seeing it in this state where there are a plethora of new growers and GPs coming into the market. It's a preparation for rec coming in. I think it's honestly not that much different. It's just more volume and more variety. And that's where I think PA is more prepared than other states where, because they're already used to a large volume, especially on certain days. And going through the pandemic where they had this huge surplus or like rise in new patients. Yeah. So they're already kind of prepared for that. So I think going to rec, really, it's just being prepared for more people, I would say, more than anything else, and needing way more space. It scales up very quickly, I would say, would probably be the biggest misconception is you can get away with having a very small space in a medical market. Rec scales up quickly. That first 6 months to a year of rec is insane every single day without fail.
Do you, like, since PA has been so much more aggressive, and obviously other states, I would say, on what you said, obviously makes a lot of sense. Do you think because PA has had such an aggressive medical market that when they go rec, they might not see nearly as much of that like hump upwards because it's like, well, you kind of already ran med that way. So maybe there'll be naturally an increase and a good one, but maybe not as crazy because so many people already took advantage of the one side of the market.
I would say so. And also you're saying that the states around PA are going rec first.
Yeah, that's going to take some of that.
So that'll take some of the air to those sales, and should dull it a little bit. But when you have such a densely populated city like Philadelphia, and you're going to see the number of dispensaries in the city grow exponentially, I think that spike will be seen maybe more so than like the outskirts, where probably most people that would shop rec have already got their cards for the most part, out, you know, in the suburbs of Philly. But in the city specifically, I think you'll see a huge explosion.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think most cities with med don't really get too many dispensaries in the city limits themselves. It seems to always be politicians like, well, I just know there's going to be fucking crime. There's going to be bad things. But rec, they have to kind of put it in the cities. That's the whole point, is to normalize it to that. That's a really good point, actually. So having worked in cannabis as deeply as you have, what would be something you might tell somebody who came up and said, I'm thinking about working in cannabis. Can you give me something solid, either culturally or given, you know, applying in, that would help them understand what's in front of them?
That's an interesting question. I think I would tell them to arm themselves with the most education possible, because I think that's the best base that you can have going into this industry, because the culture is changing already. So if you try to adapt to the current culture, you're already two steps behind, because it's evolving about every 6 months or so. You're seeing something new that's substantial enough to shift a culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you will learn and become the culture if you get yourself on the cutting edge of education. reading every day the new studies. Some are more valid than others, but that's, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, especially with something as still new as cannabis. And take that education and put it towards whatever avenue of the industry you prefer. If you're a business person, put that to the retail side. Get involved with not just the terpenes, but also strain lineage, understanding the plant from a botanical standpoint. Or if you're a grow person, then, you know, really putting all of that education into the growing process and how to create the most stable way to duplicate a given product. Like for me personally, I prefer that strain lineage style education. I like that retail side. I like that business side, where I think that you have the unique opportunity with cannabis to create a new way of doing business, which is my biggest gripe with the East Coast, is that there is no industry like cannabis because there never has been an industry like cannabis.
Yeah.
So I get discouraged when I see people try to take whatever industry they used to work in and cram cannabis into that box, because they think, well, it's just a business and a business is a business. So if I just manipulate it into what I'm comfortable with, I will get the same results as the big company that I just worked for, and I'll be the rich CEO. And that's not true. And that's because cannabis is such a unique product. You do not need to advertise for cannabis. You don't need to market it. You don't need a billboard. You don't need anything. Weed will sell itself. So how do you get someone to come to your dispensary when there are 15 within 20 miles of you, is that culture and that education. Because when people come to a dispensary, they want you to have what they want, and they want it to feel like it's their dealer. People love to request a bud tender.
Yeah, the personal dealer more so, not just a dealer, but somebody who's like curating it to them.
It becomes
in their language.
Yeah, it becomes location and availability. You know, the best ability is availability always.
Yeah, because if you think you're great and you don't have weed,
but
you realize nobody will come.
So to my point is that I think there's a new way to do business. And I would tell whoever's coming into the industry to not think in a way of how another business would do it. You have the ability to create it. It is a formless blob in front of you, and you have the ability to create it if you so choose. And I think with enough people, you can create a new way of doing business that's better and different and more beneficial for everyone than these larger, you know, big box or whatever MSO companies that are trying to merge it into now.
Do you see that in your experience with folks you work with? Like, you know, as you said, there's kind of different categories in the industry, you know, the grow side of it, and of course extraction's like a little sublet of that as well. You could do property stuff if you're just into, you know, real estate. You could do the retail stuff if you like the metrics. Advertising's a corner, of course, which is more like traditional advertising than anything too specific. Do you find a lot of people, I wouldn't say a lot, maybe it's not the right way to say it, but do you find people tend in cannabis to stay in the lane that they started? Or does it seem like a lot of branching out, like somebody starts in the dispensary and then goes to the grow, or goes to the grow dispensary and then goes corporate or to like compliance or something weird?
I would say that dispensary is usually the starting off point. And I would say that's unfortunately because it's the most retail setting, so it has the highest turnover, followed by grows. So usually people's foot in the door is a butt tending job. And that's where pretty much everyone who's in a corporate level position in most dispensary corporate structures started as, because that's their rags to riches story that they love.
Right.
They love, you got to have one.
Yeah, just like drink, right? Started from the bottom, now we heat.
We know the staff. We have a bud tender up here in every meeting. But I would say, yeah, for the most part, if you... a small percentage of people go from retail to grow, but they know that coming in. They say that in their interview, I couldn't get a job but to grow.
I want to be a grower.
I want to be a grower. I want to get in the industry. Let me be a grower. And those people who are very driven to do it, because most dispensary people, if you're committed to staying in the industry, they want to keep you on the retail side because of that turnover. Mm-hmm. There's that, you know, you want to keep good people, and it's, you know, unfortunate that you can't always get what you want if you're good at what you do.
It's a really good point to make. I've seen, I think, a lot of people seem to express interest in a grow. And I think in the same way, it's like, because you've never been in there, you've never seen the fields of green. But every single time I ask somebody who has worked in a grow, doesn't currently, but who has, and I'd say maybe I'm up to four or five people that I've known for like a good amount of time have done it, every single one of them is trying to get out of that job. Like, they wouldn't mind moving up, but not in the grow. They're like, I want to go lateral and then up. The customer service woman that I ended up talking to from a different business who was in Florida, she's like, oh yeah, I kind of started out in the grow and it was fun, but 10, 12, 14 hour days, indoor landscaping, weigh your clothes because you can't steal the weed. Like, it feels like a weird type of abuse, even though you do actually get to grow the plants. You do understand a lot of that. Sort of like working at a car dealership, it might not be a bad experience to have so you understand it, but nobody that I meet really wants to get stuck for their lives working in a car dealership. It's just not the part that you like as much.
Everybody wants to be a head grower. Nobody wants to be a trimmer or, you know, an extractor assistant or anything like that, because that work is hard and it's arduous and like it's, you got to be precise.
It's
and
production it's, work, really. At
it's,
that level.
It's production work and it's for real.
Yeah.
Especially at that level that they have to produce it now. But, you know, there are people that do work their way up. But I don't know. That like the one head grower that I have ever known got his PhD in chemistry from Stanford. So it's like that's the level that head growers are at now.
Shit,
like
yeah.
It's not, you know, your friend in his basement who like, he grew the best blue dream in his backyard that one summer. It was crazy. Now he's like running Jungle Boys head grow operation. No, that's scientists, because at that production level, you have to have it down to a science. And that's where, you know, you see cannabis plant evolving into this different plant than what it was. Like, it's just not the same plant that it was. And that's because you have scientists growing it as opposed to, you know, whoever.
Yeah, I'd say like a head grower, like you said, with science, there are people I run into who want to grow, but they actually want to be farmers.
Yes.
And I'd say, like, you know, for anybody out there, every once in a while somebody's like, oh, we're going to grow, but I just want to grow it in that bespoke home cook kind of operation. And in that same way, you know, especially if you've ever watched like How Stuff Works and you see some of those factories, when they're making like tasty cakes, the guy who runs that fucking production floor isn't like the best home baker on the planet. That dude runs like a computer with units of measurement and flow charts, and it's just production operations. He's not like, man, these tasty cakes taste really freaking good today. These Skittles are delicious because I'm such a good home cook. It's like, no, it's a different, it's science at that
right.
point. It's all chemicals to it. And a good thing to keep in mind, I think, just like people who wanted to become vets when they were children, and you realize you also have to kill the animals as well as save their lives, and you're like, yeah, it's not such a friendly, it's not Bambi anymore. You know?
Yeah.
It's a real job. Now, working as long as you have, especially, do you think you're going to stay in cannabis in America?
I
thinking about federal legalization eventually is going to change a lot. What do you think the landscape is for you as far, or not necessarily for you, but for the market and your thoughts about employment in the market as the government makes it easier for weed to be everywhere potentially?
Okay, so you brought up federal legalization.
Mm-hmm.
This is my cannabis hot take, and I stand by it. And I think that if you think it through, it's the right thing. I am adamantly against federal legalization. They should not federally legalize it.
And so that means on the schedule, they wouldn't knock it down to 3 per se, which is, I think, where it's open season.
Right.
Maybe down to 2, though.
Maybe. I could see that. Maybe
okay.
decriminalize it. But each state should have it legal, because as it currently stands, everything you buy in that state has to be grown and produced and made in that state. And you see the revenue that tax bill brings in from cannabis to states, and they run it on platforms that are unique to their state to create better public works projects and better flow of cash. In Washington, a bunch of it went to road work. I know that my dad worked in the county. He was telling me about the different roads that got to be rebuilt and redone, that these were old and dilapidated. In Nevada, 15% of their tax revenue went to public schools, and they're in the bottom 10% of public schools. So they get to use that, and they're generating $5 million a month in tax revenue in cannabis in Nevada. And 15% of that goes to public schools. So I think it's more beneficial for us as a country if each state independently legalizes it on their own individual platform that self-serves them, it generates jobs specifically for their state instead of if on a federal legalization scale, it will monopolize cannabis. If I live in Oklahoma, why would I spend more money to buy from a small farm in Oklahoma when I can buy some Jungle Boys California Trainwreck OG or whatever for half the price and it's some California fire?
Yeah, it's all this genetics, man.
It's all going to come from California, Oregon, and Washington.
The sunny states. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just keep it self-sustaining in each state? I want all 50 states to have it legalized. I do believe that it should be legal, but because of the way the world works, I think it is more beneficial if all 50 states independently legalize it.
You make a very compelling point, although I'm sure if anybody turns off right after you say something, it should be legal, they'll probably have a different opinion of exactly what was said. You know, I couldn't say I have a hot take ready, per se. Truly a question I haven't thought about to, like, a stable point. But you really do bring up a lot of really significant information on that. Now, I feel like I was talking about this unknowingly, I guess, to a friend because, you know, as we went through mergers before, I've actually been through three now, but not all in cannabis. One of them was in cannabis recently. And, you know, I kept thinking, you know, what is the nature of a merger? You know, it's a company that is smaller, right? Like any small business, and maybe you're just running the best hamburger joint that you can, and McDonald's comes in and says, hey, I want to buy you out. And the first thought is not how much, because although that is a responsible next thought, it's why do you want to buy me out? Are you going to Walmart me, where you just actually want to buy me, kill me, to make sure that everybody has to come to you and never knows otherwise? Or are you buying me out for some reason because you give a shit about quality hamburgers in your McDonald's? It's like, I'm pretty sure it's the only same reason. You just want to create that monopoly, like you said. And so my thought was, you know, as you see businesses and their strategies of marketing and advertising start to overwhelm their business, they're making themselves inflate and look better. You know, like that movie star needs that next big movie.
Right.
And hopefully Marvel will come calling. We really haven't seen the money arrive in cannabis yet. And I think your point is especially valid now to think about it, because there's billions of dollars in cannabis, and that's, yeah, with a B, huge numbers. But Microsoft and Apple haven't gotten into cannabis yet.
Right.
Like Exxon and freaking Goldman Sachs haven't put a dollar into cannabis. They probably have, like, you know, done weird stuff
right.
in the government.
Oh, yeah.
But there is no piece of paper that links them. They practice that shit. But I bet you they are watering that ground so it's nice and soft and they can plant hard as soon as it's ready. And I think, you know, from my side, my hot take would be, I think every company you think really wants to be in cannabis is going to be changing their stripes as soon as they realize that trillion-dollar companies are going to come in and try to do the multinational level, not multi-state. MSOs already create some difficulty with the idea of where is the money going? Is it leaving your state or coming in from profitability? And that's already difficult, and we're in the situation you described where it's just state to state. But, like, what if Mercedes-Benz in Germany wanted to fucking send us wheat? Like, we currently eat Australian beef and beef from Brazil all the time, and they don't really tell you at the point you're about to take a bite. So how do I know that the Scandinavian weed, it sounds really cool, and in a way, I'd like to try it. In Scandinavia, though.
Right.
Like, it's fresh vegetables. You don't want to eat an apple that came from China and had to go on a slow boat. It's probably more boat than apple. And so I kind of, you know, I might be designing my own hot take on that. I think you have a lot of, like, really hard to digest points in the way you can't break them up. They're solid ideas. I always have that gut feeling with the way that our government, and if anybody's paid attention to politics, you could be red, you could be blue, you could be purple. But at the very least, I think we all agree it's not quite working as an efficient system of decision making and creating quality for all members of the union. You know, like it seems that it's a lot of infighting, a lot of egotistical shit. So imagine them trying to create marijuana laws, knowing they're going to cash grab, knowing they're going to pay their cousins first and their uncles. We already had children of presidents become president. What do you think is going to happen when they all know this is going to be like a multi-trillion-dollar industry globally? How many people really want to be in the top, like, five or six companies? And do you really want to have to deal with all that shit? Or would you just sell quickly? So you know what? I'd love to see what anybody else thinks about it. If you do, you can always hit us down in the comments on my IG. But that might be the most significant point, I think, of the whole episode, really. Of federal legalization. Now, decriminalization, as we said.
Yeah,
solid.
Absolutely.
We do not want people at all facing legal challenges.
No.
I'd say much like with alcohol, it's like if you're misbehaving, I think there's just normal laws that make sense, but it shouldn't be as a matter of what you're using. It should just be a matter of your behavior as a result of using it.
Right, exactly.
Drunk driving's bad, but I don't think alcohol is a terrible thing. They always say, like Jefferson said, there is not really any bad technology if you are educated. But if I give a baby a gun, right? Like,
right.
You're not going to have a good day. Usually not too good of a day. So as a last two kind of questions I have on the docket, knowing that a lot of these things we've talked about will change cannabis landscape, will change the way the jobs are, once potential legalization or the next big change comes, do you think there might be a point that cannabis is no longer a big deal? Like, why work in cannabis? It's a CVS pharmacy. It's a giant food store, or maybe, you know, I guess in PA we have state stores, unfortunately, working in just a liquor store. Or has that, have we already crossed that point where in some places it is kind of weak?
I think, yes, it will eventually become, hey, you work at a dispensary, that's cool. I think it'll be a lot like the craft beer industry. Okay. I think it will mimic that quite a bit, even more so if my ideal scenario of all 50 states being independently legal, then it'll be like, oh, okay, well, I really like this grower, we'll go there. And then at that point, you know, I would imagine down the road, they'll be, you know, being able to smoke there. You know, Las Vegas already has a lounge. At Planet 13, right. You can go smoke in their lounge. So that will become a more normalized thing at that point as well. So I would see it more mimicking that, where it's maybe like, it's quirky that you work at a dispensary, but it's not now, where it's like, oh, wow, you work at a dispensary. Like, I have a series of questions for you, which is usually what happens when you tell someone, oh, I manage a dispensary. Oh, can I have a conversation with you, please?
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like a lot of people think, oh, you work in weed, can you just get me a job in there? Like,
yeah.
Skills are relevant, knowledge are relevant. Right. It just got to be chill, bro. I mean, back to what we said before, just the expectation of what the job is might be unrealistic in those areas. Interesting. Well, especially thinking globally, as we mentioned, you know, what if Mercedes-Benz got into weed? But what if Mercedes-Benz got into weed in Germany? Do you think you'd ever move to another country if their weed situation was ideal or
100%. So, I don't remember the exact date, but I was reading an article sometime back about Germany's already starting to prepare to become Eastern Europe's main, like, depot for cannabis, like import export. And I think they were talking like the year, like maybe 2028 or something like that.
Okay.
With something like their target date, something like that. So down the road for sure. But I would see that as a massive opportunity to go like, hey, I have seen it from the ground up, literally from the West Coast to the East Coast, ridden the wave. I'm now riding the next wave. Let me show you how it's done. And I have lived in Europe. I really enjoyed my time in Europe. I would love to live in a place like Munich or something like that. Berlin, of course, like these gorgeous cities. I would take that in a heartbeat.
Did you get to sample any European weed while you were out in Europe at that?
I did. I was living in Slovakia, and one of the guys that was living in the same building as me went to his parents' house and got some weed from his hometown or whatever, and came back, and it was pretty good. It was definitely outdoor grown, but it was really nice. It just felt very mellow. He couldn't tell me what strain it was. You know, it was a little leafy, but, you know, they did their best they could to trim. You could tell it was someone's, like, farm.
Okay.
But it was really nice. And you know what? It was a ton of weed for not very much money.
Do they, I know I've heard Europeans dip their French fries in mayo like some crazy Americans do and drink their beer at room temp. is there anything weird you ran into as far as like the weed ceremony out there? Did they prefer like chillums or spluffs or bongs, or were they on like all the tech, or was it just like roll a J?
Well, they love tobacco. So tobacco is in everything, in every bowl, in every spliff. You're mixing tobacco with
shit,
that weed.
Yeah.
That is...
I should have thought of that. That makes a lot of sense.
That is happening.
I mean, Eastern Europe is pretty much just an ashtray.
Oh, yeah. And it's always joints because they love to roll their own cigarettes as well. So just the habit of rolling. Lots of joints.
Is it kind of easier to hide in plain sight then, since if everybody rolls their own cigarettes? And it's funny because there's one guy I know who's actually British who moved over here. And he was, I think, in the military there too. And like... we were out on like a deck at a local like bar, and he like whips and starts rolling something. I'm like, whoa, whoa, dude. Like, we are in America, but that is not quite there yet. And he was like, just rolling up some tobacco. But it was a spliff because he's like, hey, man, no, it actually was a spliff. You're like blowing up my spot. But I was like, let me try it out. Like, not thinking completely. Right. He was like, I feel way too fucking lightheaded for this to be weed. Like, no tobacco in me, not necessarily bedfellows. But immediately was like, oh, yeah. And he was like, oh, that's all I really smoke. It's like, yeah, you guys, like, the tobacco wars in America never really got across the pond. They know cigarettes are bad, and they just go, yeah, they're bad for you.
Yeah, give me one.
Can you light yours on mine?
Yeah.
That's cool. And just never let them go out. Well, that's interesting to see. I would say that would be an experience. I've probably had a Canadian weed, but didn't know it, of course.
Right.
You know, I'm sure we've had a butt ton of Mexican weed, especially in the earlier days.
Oh, yeah.
But
growing up in Washington, BC Bud, that was like the most...
BC Bud,
that was the most coveted thing.
That was always what I heard about.
That BC Bud, man.
Cali and BC, yeah, the early days of internet pictures of weed where I was like, it looks like that, and it's purple and white. Like, are you sure that's even weed? You know, the first time hearing the word indica and sativa. But that, you know, I kind of think the same, although I have not traveled much. I haven't been out of the U.S. If I could... sort of weed vacation, which I think a lot of people do already.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But especially looking forward to that for Europe, that'd be great if it was like, I gotta take a business trip and get high in a European nation. Sure, with Brexit and EU, I bet they're just like in America. There's a lot of hands grabbing at a lot of things. But do you think, as a final thought, that Europe should also have it be, like, if Germany's going to be the powerhouse, that means they're going to be shipping across country lines. Do you think it would benefit them to think of it as well, like America's, where it's like state to state? Don't make French weed go to Germany. Just keep it in France so that they can keep their own. And certainly France, you could divide up into its city states or however they cut it up.
I think that would be the most ideal scenario for sure. I think self-sustainability is always the best option, but that requires everybody playing nice.
A thing I don't think humans have ever seen at this point.
Yeah. And that's the unfortunate part, is where in a perfect world, yes, I think cannabis has the unique ability to substantially change the world, not only from a health perspective, but also from a financial and cultural perspective as well. And you're already seeing that with now cannabis has already paved the way for something like psilocybin, which is quietly getting decriminalized and being federally tested and starting to being prescribed by psychiatrists. You know, it may not be as lucrative, but it is equally, if not more important for health and wellness.
Yeah. And modern health, especially, because I feel like in antiquity, we were less triggered. It was less rapid, the information stream. So back then, you know, a couple of ayahuasca trips, a couple of magic mushroom trips, you know, they would do it like once in a lifetime at that age where you're becoming an adult. So just like when we do it, teenage years, expand your mind around 13, become the adult version of yourself mentally so you can follow it. And now that our lives are way more condensed with stress and way more like active and rampant, I'd say, with it, I feel like those things can present themselves with even more frequency, potentially, because you kind of have to get your mind right, especially in the modern world, more with the internet attacking and everything else. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, I think we'll see a lot of those other, you know, MDMA, psilocybin, all things that really were in the sort of psychological health perspective before people figured out how fun they can be.
Right.
And so we may see that coming back, I guess, you know, 40, 50 years after we're no longer in that Reaganomics. You know, blast everybody who's smiling, because if they're not rich, we don't need to listen to them. It seems to be coming back around. But for everybody out there, that is all we have for you today. And we know there's plenty more as things move on. Keegan will be back, I'm sure, because we plan to fuck with each other quite a bit in the cannabis world. And we'll have him on to give us more insight into what's going on. So I want to thank you again, Keegan. Thanks for making the time.
Man. Thank you for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. And to everybody out there, thank you for listening. If you ever want to check out more that's going on with the show, check me out on Instagram at thecannabis.professor. Also, we were recording this on cameras. One of them might have died in the midst of it, but we got most of this on a camera. So at some point, please watch out for some YouTube things coming out in 2022. It's actually a very exciting time for the professor. But until next time, everybody, be sure to grow knowledge and extract truth. Professor out.